Well, hello, everybody. Mike Malloy here. Welcome to Monday night's program. Thanks for tuning in. By the way, this portion of the Mike Malloy Show is brought to you by Patriot Majority. Patriot Majority believes it is our patriotic duty as Americans to pass health care reform now with a strong public plan option. You're going to be hearing more about that as the program progresses tonight. They are a new advertiser, and we are giving them a lot of attention. Speaking of advertisers, have you did he kill himself yet? No, he didn't. Have you heard the latest? Walmart, Best Buy, CVS, GMAC, Financial are among eight major advertisers who have confirmed pulling their advertising from the Glenn Beck program. In light of his comments, not the least of the most offensive was that Barack Obama is a racist. Now, these advertisers didn't pull their spots from Fox News, of course. They requested that their ads do not air during Beck's 5 p.m. program, which is a net, it's a wash for Fox. I mean, the money is still coming in, but it's just not on Beck's program. The advertisers involved here are the latest in the round of pullout from Beck's show. They sent their statements to colorofchange.org. That's the website that's been handling this. Allergen Company, the maker of Restasis, said, quote, we reviewed our commercial schedule, and based on your feedback, we've put any programming featuring Glenn Beck on our do not air list. This means that you no longer see any Restasis ads during programming featuring Glenn Beck. Thanks again for bringing this to our attention. From GMAC Financial Services, specifically Ally Bank. Ally advertises on a broad spectrum of programs to reach our potential customers. Our advertising is not an endorsement of editorial content on any program. We have ceased to advertise on the Glenn Beck program. Best Buy bailed out. Broadview Security said, given the considerations, we have requested of Fox News not to include us in the rotation that would have our commercials running on Glenn Beck's show. CVS Pharmacies, while advertising on Fox is part of our communication plan, we had not requested time on Glenn Beck's show specifically. We have instructed our advertising agency to inform Fox to ensure Glenn Beck's program is not part of our advertising plan. Rebath, we are no longer airing our commercials on the Glenn Beck show. Travelocity, we did not specifically place our ad on the show. We buy ads in bulk, and then they are placed somewhat randomly. However, we have now specifically asked that our ads do not appear during the Glenn Beck show. Walmart. Walmart today confirmed the retailer pulled ads from the Glenn Beck show on August 3rd. Yada, yada, yada. Now, these companies join the list of advertisers that have bailed out of this pigs program, including ConAgra, Geico, Lawyers.com, Men's Warehouse, Procter & Gamble, Progressive Insurance, Radio Shack, Roche, SC Johnson, Sanofi Aventis, Sargento, and State Farm Insurance. Well, my goodness. Do I have to revamp my statement about corporate America doesn't care what's on these programs and only sponsors them because it provides diversion? Maybe I need to revise the statement. Well, all I can say is that's a good thing that they've pulled their ads. I mean, you know, the Glenn Beck program.
I'm thinking about killing Michael Moore. And I'm wondering if I could kill him myself or if I would need to hire somebody to do it.
Interesting question.
I think I could. I think he could be looking me in the eye.
Yeah?
You know?
Yeah.
And I could just be choking the life out. Is this wrong?
Oh.
I stopped wearing my What Would Jesus Band Do? And I've lost the whole sense of right and wrong now.
Really?
I used to be able to say, yeah, I'd kill Michael Moore. And then I'd see the little band, What Would Jesus Do? And then I'd realize, oh, he wouldn't kill Michael Moore. At least it wouldn't choke him to death.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure.
Yeah, you never know about Jesus. Jesus may just decide, Glenn, based on your experience with Michael Moore, to go ahead and throttle him. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness, Glenn. Well, just remember, if you do decide to blow yourself away, don't wipe out innocent bystanders. Okay? Thank you, Glenn. The latest racism that is just, man, it's all over the place. The Ohio Daily blog reports on a police dispatcher from the North Canton, Ohio police who recently sent out a racist email from her at-work email account. Her name is Anita Malachowski. And she sent the message to all of her good buds. It was a picture of the new Air Force One tail number. And she writes, yes, please forgive me. I'm really sorry. I really, really tried not to laugh. But now attached to the email was a photoshopped image of Air Force One. And on the plane's tail is a new number. It's capital N, capital I, 66, capital E, capital R. Write it down. Take a look at it. It's the N-word. As the Ohio Daily Blog writes, quote, this type of message is offensive coming from anyone, but coming from someone in the position of dispatching police and prioritizing calls, it's downright horrifying. The North Canton, Ohio police have had a hard enough job as it is without dispatchers trying to incite a race riot or stirring tensions during the hot months of summer. It's really not funny, Anita Malachowski. It really isn't. I just wonder if you you're Polish or you have a Polish last name. Maybe your husband's Polish. You might be African, but you have a Polish name. Was it funny in 1939 when Hitler invaded your country and started slaughtering Poles for no reason? Was that funny? Are Polish jokes funny? Anita, what do you think? The Minnesota Independence, Andy Berkey, points to a recent interview that Representative Michelle Bachmann, the crazy woman from Minnesota, gave to the conservative neo-Nazi website WorldNet Daily. And Bachmann said she will only make a bid for president if God tells her to run. Okay. Of course, God's busy with Sarah Palin right now, Michelle, but it must just burn Michelle's ass that somebody is crazier than her, a female Republican who has commanded center stage. And poor Michelle is left alone to say, well, if God asked me to run for president, here's what she said, quote, if I felt that's what the Lord was calling me to do, I would do it. When I have sensed that the Lord is calling me to do something, I've said, yes, Lord, but I will not seek a higher office if God is not calling me to do it. That's really my standard. If I'm called to serve in that realm, I would serve. But if I'm not called, I wouldn't do it. Called? How do you do that? Hello? Hello, Michelle? Yes. Michelle, this is God. Oh, hi. How are you? I'm fine. How's everything in Minnesota? Oh, great, God. I want you to do something for me. Oh, yes, I'll be happy to. What? What do you want me to do? I want you to run for president. For president? Why not senator? These people are nuts. Now, this is nothing new. Back in 2006, God told Bachmann to get into politics and later told Bachmann to run for Congress. God did. Psst, hey, Michelle. This is what she said on was it October 14, 2006, when she was standing before some other I think it was in a church. She said, quote, 22 months ago, he called me to run for the United States Congress, and my husband thought, you need to do this. This is a big deal to do something like this, especially if God asked you to. So we set aside 3 days where we fasted and we prayed. And long about the afternoon of day two, we knew. So we jumped in the sack and just bunnied our little brains. Oh, no, she didn't say that. And long about the afternoon of day two, we knew. We knew that we knew that we knew. That's what she said. This was it. So we jumped in. And little did we know that out of 435 seats for Congress, this race would turn into being one of the top three in the country. End quote, Michelle Bachmann. Yeah, we fasted and prayed and then we got naked.
ready for a liberal helping of truth? It's More Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. The again, over the weekend, an awful lot of emails came in about this stuff, about the health care reform. And I think part of it is the confusion out there about the public option. On the one hand, it sounds like Barack Obama and Kathleen Sebelius are backing away from the public option. I don't know. Who knows what goes on in the minds of these folks, how to handle this. You know, I'll go back to what I and a lot of people have been saying, including you probably for a long time, ever since the election. The Republicans, there's not going to be any assistance from the Republicans on any issue at all. They're not going to vote for anything that Obama comes up with that is the least bit progressive, including the revamping of how health insurance is meted out to the American public. And please keep in mind, we're not talking about health care. We're talking about health insurance, how it's handled. And these Republicans will, go to the mattresses, as they say. They will fight tooth and nail to ensure the viability of their corporate sponsors, as will a bunch of blue dog Democrats, unless Obama gets the Democrats get the Democratic caucus together and just say, look, you're going to cut the crap and do it now. I don't understand why Obama, he's still, after, what's it been, 200 days now, 150 days, I don't even know, but he's still talking bipartisanship? Are you crazy? Mr. President, hello, you're seeking bipartisanship is very admirable, but this is not the 1950s or the 60s even, or the 70s. It's not the 80s. Hello, Mr. President. The Republican Party has been reduced to a pile of psychopaths. That's all. A squirming mass of snake-like psychopaths. They will not support you or America on anything unless it's destruction, war, death, or somehow benefits their corporate sponsors. Please, Mr. President, give it up. Really, tell the Republicans to piss off. Go ahead, work with your Democratic majority. For God's sake, we gave it to you. We elected you. We gave you enough representatives. We gave you 60 senators. What in the hell are you dicking around with Republicans for? They're useless. Forget them, Mr. President, with all due respect. Get your job done. Get it done for the American public. Most of us progressives are thoroughly pissed anyway because you would not go for single-payer health care, which could have been done. You lay it out. You say, this is what it's going to be. You do a Lyndon Johnson on the leaders, the Democratic leaders in the House and the Senate. You get their arms, put them in hammerlock, and say, this, goddammit, is what's going to happen. Single-payer. Okay, so you didn't do that. All right. Public option? Without public option, this is not health insurance reform, Mr. President. It is nothing but garbage, slop. That's it. There has to be a public option to force these predatory sons of bitches, these evil health insurance companies, to force them to stop what they've been doing to the American public for the past 25 years, which is ripping us off, telling us they're providing health insurance, and they are not, denying claims, coming up with this monumental horse crap that pre-existing condition. What the hell is pre-existing? Hey, look, insurance companies, everybody has a pre-existing condition. You know what it is? It's called death! It's just a matter of how you're going to get there. So you bastards are going to sit back, you insurance companies, and say, well, on your trip to death, we're not going to cover this part on your trip to death. And we're not going to cover this part on your trip to death. let me see. What are we going to cover on your trip to death? Wait a minute. You had a mole that you didn't report to us, and you had that mole removed 35 years ago. It was nothing but a mole. And now you have colon cancer? Well, there you go. We're not going to pay. That's what they've been doing to us. Without a public option, Mr. President, it is not health insurance reform. It is garbage, swill, slop. Don't do this to us, Mr. Obama. Don't do this to us. We gave you 60 seats in the Senate. We gave you a vast majority in the House. And we gave the presidency to you and Joe Biden and the vice presidency. Don't do this to us. Don't do it. Seriously. Tell the Republicans to go play with themselves and let the adults get the work done. And if you do that, come the 2010 election, then you'll have 66 or 67 senators, and you'll have maybe 350 representatives. Of course, then it gets a little dangerous, I realize, but then we Democrats can start peeling off these filthy blue dogs and dump them in the nearest vat of dog urine and move on with governing the country. Come on, Mr. President, don't do this.
Here's the truth speaker, Mike Malloy.
It's 26 before the hour. Joanne in Oceanside, California writes in, the media need to stop repeating the main Republican talking point and correct their statements. The public option put forth by President Obama is not a government-run health care plan. It is a government-funded health care plan. Just like Medicare, Medicaid, and the VA health care plans are, please stop the distortion. Without a public option, not for profit, there is no true reform. Co-ops will not help those, will not help, and you heard Grassley say they want co-ops without any regulations. That would not help those who can't afford health care at all. It's merely an extension for the big insurance companies, protecting them. So, yeah, I think Kathy mentioned that in her blog today, that at MikeMalloy.com, you know, the public option is not government run. But everything the Republicans are saying is a lie. At best, or at worst, a distortion at best. Every single thing that's coming out of their mouths. From the pigs like, Glenn Beck, who hopefully will not be on the air too much longer, since all those advertisers are bailing out. The pig man, this poor little pathetic Sean Hannity, who makes a lot of money, makes about $5-6 million a year. All these guys are millionaires, and they do not want a public option or single payer. Why? Because it's sport to them to watch people suffer. It is. Don't say, oh, Christ, Malloy. Don't you remember when Limbaugh, it must have been 15 years ago, 18 years ago, when during the Reagan years, 20 years ago, when there were so many homeless people all of a sudden when we went through this last time because of Republican. Maybe it was the Bush 1 years. I forget. But Limbaugh used to make jokes about the people that he would step over who were sleeping on hot air grates in New York City. This is when he worked at the studios of ABC in New York. These people like to see other people suffer. And I guess it's because of their own backgrounds, their own twisted families. I mean, look at Beck's family. Jesus, God. Look at Limbaugh's family. Maybe you better not. Look at Hannah. All these people. All these right-wingers that are on television and radio, if you take a look at whatever information you can ferret out about these people and how they grew up and what they grew up with and without and how many beatings they got from, their parents or I don't know, some harsh private school they went to or public school, every single one of these people do it for sport. I mean, why would somebody who is a multimillionaire, pick any one of these guys, in right-wing talk radio, why would they want to deny a public option to people who can't afford to continue to be hosed by these goddamn insurance companies. Why would, think about it for just a second. Why would Glenn Beck give a rat's ass where you buy your health insurance? Why would Rush Limbaugh care where you buy your health insurance? See, when you stop and think about it, then you realize, well, yeah, it becomes very clear. They do this for sport. They do it for sport. They're all cowards. They're all sneaks and liars. They promote the idea of war. They like to see American men and women go off and die. They are perverts that way. These are Thanatosis-inspired psychopaths. They are. They're crazy. Don't you get it? Well, I know you do, but this is from Jim in Oakland, California. It says, Mike, I was listening to the podcast from Friday's show and heard you mention that Jesus was the first single-payer health care provider. It reminded me of the time right before they put Jesus to death, and Pontius Pilate gave the people a chance to save Jesus. The choice was between him or a convicted criminal named Barabbas. The Pharisees and the high priests went among the crowds and worked them into a frenzy. Barabbas! 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 They screamed and shouted, and thus Jesus was condemned to death. It has a strange but fitting similarity with what happened in these town hall meetings, where the people have an actual chance to save something good and are convinced to vote against their best interests. Seems these Christians never learn, do they, Mike? Jim in Oakland. No, they don't. They never do learn. Of course not. Of course they don't. There may be a few, they may start wiping themselves out, though. I forget what state, and it doesn't matter because it'll pop up in other states, too, where it is now legal to carry a concealed weapon into a bar. Jesus Christ. Was it Arizona? Hey, all you people listening in Phoenix, really? You get to carry a gun into a bar? Oh, that makes sense. Yeah. Because you know why? It makes sense because some terrorists may be in there, right? Or no. I get it. On the way from the bar, when you've had about six drinks and you're drunk on your ass, and you got your arm around your girlfriend's waist and some boogeyman is going to jump out of the bushes and want to steal your wallet, right? And you're going to shoot him just like they do in the movies, right? You're going to pull out your gun and shoot your girlfriend. That's what you're going to do. You know that's what you're going to do. Oh my God. Loaded guns in bars. And I watched a bit of the news tonight, and they had, you know, the usual yahoos, the usual loon bats, moon bats, crazy people saying, yeah, well, you know, somebody has a permit to carry a gun, shouldn't be forced to leave it in the car just because they want to go into a bar and get drunk on their ass. That shouldn't happen. And as far as taking it into a church, well, look what happened the other day when that Dr. Seiler, he got, was it Seiler? He got shot dead, didn't he? You know, that guy that did the abortion. See, if he would have been armed. Yeah, take your gun, your loaded gun, into a bar on Saturday night. And if you don't kill yourself, take it to church on Sunday morning. And if you don't kill yourself, take it with you when you drop your preschooler off on Monday morning. And if you don't kill one of the kids or a teacher or the principal when it goes off because you're such a dumbass that you and so eaten up with fear and cowardice that you have to carry a loaded gun when you go into a church? A bar? Well, but I repeat myself. Dan writes, enough. Healthcare reform without the public option is nothing more than a sellout to the insurance industry. We may not get healthcare reform, but I would rather fight to the end trying. Consider this. On their side, the corporatists can generate 45 to 50% to defeat healthcare reform. On our side, we can do the same to win the day for healthcare reform. However, this needs to be viewed in the context of a national campaign. In this context, their side starts with 30% of the population, and our side starts with 40%, leaving 30% up for grabs. Obviously, it is considerably easier for our side to get to 50 plus 1, and that's the number which will win the day for healthcare reform. Is it going to be close? Yes. Is it going to be a knockdown dragout? Yes. You say this is not a national campaign. Wrong. It's simple. It comes down to conservative and moderate Democrats who need to feel the heat. If they are not going to support the Democratic Party and their president, then there are consequences to their decisions. Call your representatives. Call your president. Email your president. Call, mail, talk to your friends, attend public forums, voicing your support. Be creative. I refuse to believe that at the end of the day, we do not outnumber them enormously. Dan. Well, that's true. We don't. But apparently, we have a president who is so desperate to accommodate. And I don't know what that's about. Is it because he grew up in both a black and white world? Is it because he's a bridge between two separate and disparate consciousnesses? Is that it? And Barack Obama is trying his damnedest to unite everybody, and he thinks that in order to unite everybody, you've got to reach out to Nazis? What would President Obama do? What would he have done in 1939 when Germany invaded Poland? Would he have said something like, well, now, we don't agree with that, but come on, Mr. President, for Christ's sake, we gave you everything. And what are you going to do? Are you going to knuckle under to these brain-dead, useless, filthy Republicans? Don't reach out to them unless you have a hand grenade in your hand with the pin pulled. Then reach out. That's what they would do to you, pal. Reach out to Republicans. Screw Republicans. Pound them into the ground. They are not relevant. The only thing that's relevant is their shouting and screaming and frothing and pounding on doors and stomping their feet and screaming liar, liar to a representative who wants to get the truth out as he or she knows it. Well, we don't have a plan yet, but I'll take your questions. Liar! I haven't said anything. Liar! You know, that sort of stuff. Don't do it, Mr. President. Don't pay any attention to them. They're irrelevant. They're not Americans. They're poison. They watch Fox News. They read WorldNet Daily. They go to FreeRepublic.com. They're psychopaths. And there are millions of them. They're the ones who didn't vote for you. They're the ones who wanted John McCain and Sarah Palin to run the country. Oh, dear God. They're the ones who are waiting for Michelle Obama to feel the long, bony finger of her God tapping her on the shoulder, saying, listen up, Michelle. I want you to run for president.
The headlines and the sound of the crowd in my ear. You might ask what it takes to remember when you know that you've seen it before. Where a government lies to a people and a country is drifting to war. And there's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again. And we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments are killing.
He's not ready to make nice. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 10 before the hour. I want to share something with you, okay? This comes from Dorothea. Dear Mike, I've been listening to you, and as I can with the time slot, KPOJ has you in for years now. Many times I've wanted to call in, but I feel that writing might be the best. Over a year ago, I gave birth to my second child, a boy named Devin Casper. His sister, Aiden Celeste, was two at the time of Devin's birth. Yes, their initials on purpose are ACDC, just to give you a sense of our humor. After 37 days of Devin growing and thriving, he stopped breathing in my arms. My husband, Alex, was on with 9-11 in seconds, 9-1-1 in seconds, while I had begun CPR. Aiden was asleep in her room. Within minutes, the paramedics showed up, seven of them. They worked valiantly, but said We had to go to the hospital. I went in the ambulance. My husband stayed home with our sleeping daughter until we figured out how to get someone to stay at the house with her. The ER doctor finally came over to me in the room to let me know that Devin's heart just wasn't starting and his brain hadn't been getting oxygen for over 45 minutes. Even if they could get his heart going, his brain was now dead. They stopped working on him, called the time of death. Then it hit me. My son wasn't going to be a miracle. He was dead. Alex, my husband, showed up at the ER. They told him, and he came into the room where I was holding my dead son who had been wrapped in a warm blanket. The first thing Alex said through his tears was, "I'll never leave you." A nurse talked to us about organ donation. She also explained that when an infant dies, they need to do an autopsy, and we'd have to talk with some detectives. We are reality and science-based. Yes, do an autopsy because we want to know why he died, if there's anything we could have done to save him. Yes, we will donate whatever organs because if anything good can come of his death, it would alleviate some of our pain. And what a horrible yet necessary job these detectives have. And at some point, my husband gave them our insurance card. We've been aware of the soulless dictates of health insurance and billing companies for years. I knew that bills would be coming. An aunt in England who is a nurse was stunned when she heard about the series of bills we received for that night. Ambulance, ER room, doctor services. After the detectives had finished interviewing us, in our home at this point, separately, Detective Carol told me she would head to the medical examiner's office and inform us of any preliminary findings. She called within a couple of hours, told me she saw an x-ray of Devin's heart, and even she could see that it was enlarged, so they knew where to focus the autopsy. Turns out Devin had 6 undiagnosed congenital heart defects. Any one, or even 2 of them, could be survivable, but all 6 were deadly. I don't blame my doctor for not finding this. I do not blame myself or my husband for this. The fact that our son lived at all was the miracle. Our blessing was 37 days of ignorant bliss. One of the first rationalizations I had around Devin's death was that he was an old soul, being Pisces, aware that while we would gladly go into the poorhouse just to keep him alive, he didn't want us to do that. He didn't want to do that to us. Keeping him alive would have meant endless surgeries until he was old enough and lucky enough to get a heart transplant. Only recently have I recognized how weird that rationalization is. I rethought it when I heard Stephen Hawking's retort to the comment that he would have been left to die if he had lived somewhere like England. Considering Dr. Hawking is English, living and thriving thanks to the National Health Service, this fear-mongering statement was decidedly ignorant. That our going to the poorhouse would most likely have resulted from Devin surviving makes me furious. I won't go into the details of our grieving therapy other than to say that grieving isn't covered by insurance, but depression is. I'm healthy enough, as are my husband and daughter. We have health insurance, but we are mad as hell at the fact that my husband has to work for a corporation just to get coverage. I'm mad as hell that we live one step ahead of any illness. I hear these freaks of fear and hate scream, "Mine, mine, mine, and God will judge you for taking my stuff." So unlike the Jesus I learned about in catechism. We have an out. My husband and daughter have dual citizenship. We could move to Canada or Europe or anywhere else that has national health. But for all we pay in taxes, which is about 35%, I want my government to stop building bombs and start staffing hospitals and clinics. I want my government to give me at least a public option. I would be happy to find better ways to accept the death of my son. For a long time, I had a quote from Robert Kennedy as my tagline. The quote is, "Tragedy is a tool for the living to gain wisdom, not a guide by which to live." I've since moved on to the new tagline I wrote myself. My life is defined by the love I share. I've known for a long time that the more one loves, the more one stands to lose in one's life. But without that love, life isn't worth much. I can handle the pain so long as I have the memory of love. We are happy to share our tax dollars to provide health care for less fortunate citizens. I'd rather pay to the government than to add to the bonus of insurance CEOs. Thanks for being there. Yours, Dorothea. Well, thanks for writing, Dorothea. I appreciate what you had to say. I can only imagine the death of a child, and I know some of you have experienced that. My brother Danny died of cancer when he was 42 after having dealt with it for 6 years. I remember after the funeral. And my sister and I and my mother went back to her house, my mother's house, where my brother Danny had lived the last 2 years of his life. And my mother sat there and finally it hit her. And she started sobbing, as only a mother can, who has watched one of her children die. And she looked at me and she said, "Mike, it's not right. It's not right." And I didn't know what she meant. I thought she meant the cancer. My brother Danny did not have any health insurance. She said, "It's not right. Parents are supposed to die first, not their kids." We'll be back after the break. This portion of the Mike Malloy Show is brought to you by Patriot Majority. Patriot Majority believes it is our patriotic duty as Americans to pass health care reform now with a strong public plan option. Welcome back, Truth Seekers. It's about 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy Program. From Arizona Central, or azcentral.com, an unidentified man carrying an assault rifle outside the Phoenix Convention Center where President Barack Obama was speaking today has renewed concerns about protesters bringing firearms to presidential events. Ruben Gallego, a retired military veteran and Arizona Democratic Party official who saw the man, said, quote, "It's extremely disturbing that you have that kind of weapon in close proximity to where the president is," end quote. Gallego added he was demonstrating his Second Amendment rights, but he was clearly there to intimidate people who were there exercising their First Amendment rights. Neatly dressed in a white shirt, black tie, and gray slacks, the man, who only gave his first name as Chris, also had a pistol holstered at his side as he engaged in heated debates with those rallying in support of Obama's health care reform plan. A Phoenix police spokesman said plainclothes detectives were monitoring about a dozen protesters carrying guns, though no one broke any laws or was arrested. Arizona's an open carry state, blah, 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 blah. Obama was inside the convention center addressing a national gathering of the veterans of foreign wars. The president's motorcade entered and exited the facility about a block away from where protesters and supporters were staged. Police Detective Jay Oliver, one of the three officers shadowing the man with the rifle, said, quote, "We're here to keep the peace. If we need to intervene, we will intervene at that time," end quote. Can you imagine, let me ask you something, Truth Seeker. Can you imagine what it would have been like? Can you imagine how the right-wing blogosphere and the absolute nutballs at Free Republic and WorldNet Daily and the pigs on right-wing talk radio, how they would have exploded? They would have defecated all over themselves had there been an example or an incident where someone showed up outside a speech being given by George Bush or Dick Cheney. The person showed up with a shouldered sidearm and a semi-automatic assault rifle slung over his shoulder. Can you imagine? So we have another example of somebody who is critically in need of a penis implant, who, rather than getting one, for God's sake, slings a semi-automatic assault rifle over his shoulder and stands outside a venue where the President of the United States is speaking. Oh, I'm here to exercise my Second Amendment rights. Oh, really? Your Second Amendment rights? So, your Second Amendment rights include the right to show up with a semi-automatic assault rifle. Oh, my God. You know it's going to happen, don't you? You know it's going to happen. I have to say this. I've become a cruel bastard myself, but I am looking forward to the day a couple of these right-wingers draw down on each other inside a bar where they're both half-loaded. It's my goddamn Second Amendment right to carry a gun into a bar. Yeah, it is. Go ahead. And they draw down on each other, and somebody gets shot. I just hope, as in the case of Glenn Beck, if Glenn Beck ever decides to kill himself, I hope he doesn't take a bunch of innocent people with him. I also hope that when these right-wing nutcases draw down on each other in a bar, after sloshing down their liquor and their beer, that they don't kill anybody other than themselves. Seriously. I mean, you know, you don't pull out a gun of any sort, a weapon of any sort, and point at somebody unless you're fully prepared to use it. I mean, that's rule 1 through 6. Can you imagine a drunk pulling out a gun in a bar? Can you imagine some psychopathic bastard like this guy at in Arizona today showing up with a sidearm and an assault rifle? What the hell is he? I mean, what is he looking for? That's right, a penis implant. And he's got it. There it is. Two of them. Cowardly son of a bitch. The Health and Human Services Secretary, Kathleen Sebelius, was on probably the worst Sunday talk show on television. And that is CNN's State of the Union. Who is that? John King? Is it John King? State of the Union? I don't know either. Anyway, she downplayed the importance of a public insurance option yesterday, saying that it is not the essential element of a reform package. And, of course, John King didn't ask her then what is, because he also is a useless hunk of flesh who somehow stays on CNN with his half-witted questions. What she said was, what is important is choice and competition. Well, yes, Madam Secretary, you're right, choice and competition. So what do you mean by choice? Do you mean a choice between GEICO and Allstate? Ma'am, that's not choice. When you say competition, do you mean competition between GEICO and Allstate? That's not competition, is it? Because they fixed the prices. All these insurance companies, come on, give me a break. On health insurance, they have the same staff working out of some 5,000-member phone room in downtown Calcutta or wherever, somewhere in India. And they all use the same crew who says, no, I'm sorry, you're not covered. Goodbye. Asked whether a bill without a public option would be a deal breaker. Ms. Sebelius said, quote, I think there would be a competitor to private insurance. That is really the essential part. You don't turn over the whole new marketplace to the private insurance companies and trust them to do the right thing, end quote. Okay, what would that competitor be to the private marketplace, Madam Secretary? Let me think real hard. Competitor to a private would be a public. So what are you saying, Madam Secretary? Or are you talking, oh, I see, she references a compromise approach under consideration of the Senate Finance Committee. Is that the one run by Max Baucus? Which would create a network of nonprofit insurance cooperatives. What? Nonprofit insurance cooperatives? Oh, that has an Ice Cube's chance in hell of lasting more than what? 8 seconds? Nonprofit insurance cooperatives, a network? Madam Secretary, let us hope that this is just your way and the president's way of deflecting some of the craziness that's out there. Health insurance reform without a public option is garbage. Garbage. Complete garbage. And everybody knows it. Well, I don't know. So much of this stuff is just, it's just so hard to, it's so hard to sit here or to stand there or to pick up a placard and try to protest the protesters. It is so difficult, really, isn't it, to do that when you realize what the issue is. You know, as far as the death panels, D in A writes, D in A? Okay. On a certain level, by denying coverage, the insurance companies are pulling the plug on grandma, don't you think? Well, yeah, of course. That's pretty much the whole issue. But it gets reframed. It gets reframed by these right-wing, drooling sons of bitches, led by the suicider or the drug addict or the fancy pants boy, and the meme becomes a complete 180 from what the truth is. You know, the only insurance denial comes from insurance companies, for Christ's sake. Why can these morons not understand that?
As soon as we win this war, straight ahead, knock 'em dead. Pack your kit, choose your hypocrite. You don't have to go to off Broadway to see something plain absurd.
Come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
It's 21 past the hour. You know, one thing about Press the Meat on Sunday, hosted by David Gregory, who is, oh my God, is this guy so bad. But it was Rachel Maddow's first appearance on that program. And of course, Dick Armey was there. And one of the geniuses who arranged the seating put them next to each other, which I thought was great. And what I noticed in watching that program, which I don't, I haven't done it for years because it's just propaganda. But with Rachel on there, she really tore Dick Armey a new body orifice. And what was fun in watching was how Rachel, every time she had something to say to the big Dick, she would turn and look him right in the eyes and attempt to stare at his great big old misshapen head, because he would not look at her. And during the whole time that Rachel talked, he had this dung-eating grin on his face. Did you watch any of that? It was amazing. While Rachel just sliced and diced him into a million little pieces, and David Gregory sat there trying to put all the pieces back together again. Oh, well, you know, I expected David Gregory to jump up and say, Rachel! Rachel! God damn it! Do you ever want to be a guest on this program again? Stop picking on Dick! Did you watch that? Way to go, Rachel. Way to go. Because it was on Rachel Maddow's program that Dick Armey was exposed and wound up losing his affiliation with a law firm, because Dick Armey is one of the inspirations behind the Nazi brown shirts who are interrupting and disrupting these town hall meetings. It is Dick Armey who inspired people to carry guns, and of course his vermin, his little pack of rats that would include the suicider and the drug addict and fancy pants. But there was Rachel just cutting right through it, huh? Oh, my God. She's great. Andre, regarding firearms at Obama events, seems simple enough to me, Andre writes. All those armed and dangerous should be escorted, not arrested, away from the event and told to stand in a protest zone a mile away. Because in Bush world, they are guilty of maybe attacking the president. That's right. Remember the First Amendment zones? Why isn't there a Second Amendment zone? God damn it. Why is there not a Second Amendment zone? Hello. Because words can kill and a semi-automatic assault rifle can't? First Amendment zones, huh? I can remember bitching about this for 5 years. I used to say, I said, well, ladies and gentlemen, the entire United States used to be a First Amendment zone, but during the Bush crime family's crime spree, we have First Amendment zones, fenced in enclosures, away from where Dick and George may or may not be speaking. First Amendment zone. Second Amendment zone? Oh, goddamn. Oh, double goddamn. What? You would try to put me and my AK-47 in an enclosure? My, how things change. My, how things change. The FDIC closed a total of 5 banks last Friday, including the 6th largest ever. This caused a downturn on global financial markets that was reflected in the U.S. markets today. The back-to-school sales have been characterized as a train wreck, and this does not bode well for the Christmas retail season. It's very likely, however, that many retailers won't be around for that debacle. Retail sales are being driven down by declining income on several fronts. Major cities and even state governments across the country are giving workers unpaid days off and cutting pay as well. Some governments are to the point of scheduling 16 days unpaid for the coming fiscal year and should really be measuring the time off in weeks. This compounds the income already lost to vanished factory jobs and expired unemployment benefits. The inevitable loss of retail jobs will accelerate the decline of the economy still further. And as retail sales decline, tax revenues will drop, since Republicans have insisted on the regressive sales tax to fund local and state government. The spiraling unemployment will also push more prime loans into foreclosure and spike the number of people who no longer get health insurance, burdening still further public health assistance. The decline in property values is expected to cause fully half of mortgages to be underwater by the end of the year, putting anybody who is out of work or experiencing an income loss in a desperate position. If something isn't done soon, the speed of the collapse could exceed the ability of government to stop it. With garbage beginning to pile up in the streets and the nuts beginning to carry guns to political rallies, things are getting to the point where some unforeseen crisis could put us over the edge. Hurricane season is suddenly picking up as the upper-level winds are no longer cutting the tops off of tropical storms. A couple of major hurricanes could devastate the oil refineries. China's becoming less and less concerned about the consequences of cutting us off and moving to assume control of our former trading partners. Saudi Arabia is in the middle of a banking crisis that could destabilize the monarchy, and other Middle East countries are having currency problems brought on by a real estate collapse. The list of things that could cause a cascade of unfortunate events goes on and on. Prairie 2. Go to his website, prairienumeral2.com. He certainly has a way with words, huh? Between Prairie 2 and Bob Alexander, we're going to add a new person in the mix tonight, Kate Petrini, who is going to be our education correspondent. Mike, take the scenario of the man carrying a gun at a Bush rally one step further. Supposing he would have been wearing a turban. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
outrage. Oh, here it is. Back to Mike Malloy.
Regarding public option, FH writes, what most of these people don't understand, that without a public option, you end up bankrupting the system in the long run. People who have inadequate or no health care go to hospital emergency rooms to seek care. And if they have no insurance, the cost is passed on to everyone else, including those without insurance. At most of the town halls that I've seen broadcast on the cable channels, you had senior citizens asking why they should have to pay for so-and-so's benefits. Don't they think that we pay for theirs? Or that Medicare somehow fell out of the sky? I'm constantly amazed at how dense some of these people are, and at the audacity of some of these members of Congress trying to con them. And Tad in Vancouver, Washington writes, Mike, why is it no one has pointed out that even if these nuts with guns are no threat to the president, they do take resources away from possible real threats, even though I think people with guns are. So while the police or the Secret Service is watching these guys, they are not available to do their real jobs. I support the Second Amendment, but in a country that threw us in cages or threw out people from rallies for their T-shirt or bumper stickers, that now has no problem with idiots with guns? Obviously, good judgment is not a prerequisite for a carry permit. Tad in Vancouver, Washington. So what was it from the Arizona Press? Roughly a dozen people showed up today at the VFW outside with weapons, with loaded weapons, when Barack Obama was inside? It's getting worse and worse, isn't it? Well, I won't say anything inflammatory tonight, but it's right on the tip of my tongue. I mean, All right. It is time once again for, oh my goodness,
A Moment
with Bob. Brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. One in a series of missives from Bob Alexander. Tonight, the subject is We Are Legend, We Are the Monsters. Hey, Mike, my two favorite books about the transformation of societies were published over 50 years ago. Milton Mayer's They Thought They Were Free in 1955 and Richard Matheson's novel I Am Legend in 1954. I Am Legend's main character, Robert Neville, is the sole survivor of a worldwide pandemic where everyone infected with the disease has become a vampire. During the day, Neville repairs his house, hangs garlic and mirrors, gathers supplies, and hunts and kills vampires. Eventually, the infected manage to break into Neville's house, capture him, and take him to their headquarters. Through his prison window, Neville sees the vampires milling about in the yard, awaiting his execution. When they spot him, he sees the fear, the awe, and the horror in their eyes. And he understands to them, he is their monster. Previously, he saw the destruction of the vampires as a right and a moral imperative. But now, infection is normal, and he is the murderous deviant. He understands the reversal that has taken place, and as vampires were legend in pre-infection times, now he is legend in the eyes of the new race born of the infection. Neville's last thoughts as he dies, I am a new superstition, entering the unassailable fortress of forever. I am legend. And They Thought They Were Free, Milton Mayer details how fascism happened in a modern industrialized educated nation. Here's a quote. To live in this process is absolutely not to be able to notice it. Each step was so small, so inconsequential, so well explained that unless one were detached from the whole process from the beginning, unless one understood what the whole thing was in principle, what all these little measures that no patriotic German could resent must someday lead to, one no more saw it developing from day to day than a farmer in his field sees the corn growing. You see, one doesn't see exactly where or how to move. Each act, each occasion is worse than the last, but only a little worse. You wait for the next and the next. You wait for the one great shocking occasion, thinking that others when such a shock comes, will join with you in resisting somehow. And one day, too late, your principles all rush in upon you. The burden of self-deception has grown too heavy, and some minor incident, in my case, my little boy, hardly more than a baby, saying, "Jew swine," collapses. It collapses it all at once. And you see that everything has changed, and changed completely under your nose. The world you live in, your nation, your people, is not the world you were in at all. The forms are all there, all untouched, all reassuring. The houses, the shops, the jobs, the mealtimes, the visits, the concerts, the cinema, the holidays. But the spirit, which you never noticed because you made the lifelong mistake of identifying it with the forms, is changed. Now you live in a world of hate and fear. And the people who hate and fear do not even know it themselves. When everyone is transformed, no one is transformed. And suddenly it all comes down, all at once. You see what you are, what you have done, or more accurately, what you haven't done. For that was all that was required of most of us, that we do nothing. Both books are about the transformation of societies. In Matheson's book, it is irreversible. In a world completely inhabited by monsters, there are no monsters. Germany's transformation was halted and reversed, not by the Germans, but because the rest of the civilized world intervened and reduced their cities to rubble until the ruling elite surrendered. How far are we in our transformation into a society of monsters? It seems that we are an extremely tolerant nation. Collectively, we've tolerated the big Nuremberg no-no, which is wars of aggression. Our two wars have led to the deaths of over a million human beings, the majority of the dead being women and children. We've tolerated spending the hundreds of billions upon hundreds of billions of dollars of our money massacring innocent people, and we seem to accept that we will continue the slaughter for years to come. We've tolerated torturing people, sometimes to death. We've allowed the people that committed war crimes to walk away unpunished. We're quite the open-minded nation when it comes to causing death and destruction. But we are intolerant of people and ideas that could never harm us. People of the same sex who want to get married. People with a darker skin color bring out the monsters among us. There are some delusional Americans who do not want their tax dollars used to pay for someone's abortion, but have stood mute while their taxes have paid for the massacre of women and children in illegal wars. This is how monsters think. We don't have to call it fascism. The word has been overused. It belongs in history books describing how other governments and the people that supported them went mad. To stop our country from finishing the journey into insanity, let's call it what it is. We are ruled by monsters. The corporatocracy and their highly paid hacks want to turn us all into monsters. Self-centered swine who want what we want when we want it and will accept anything, including the demonization and slaughter of the innocent, to get it. The corporatocracy cannot abide being thwarted. The idea that the healthcare industrial complex might not continue to make millions of billions of dollars off of our sicknesses and our pain has caused them to exhort their hacks to incite their audiences into irrational fury. Those that resist the corporate domination of our health are branded leftists, socialists, communists. It's only a matter of time before we hear the word terrorists describing those advocating universal health care. There may come a time when we who resist will truly become the minority. We may already be there. The corporate media tells us that we who resist are in the minority. There's no way we can really be sure of how many of us there are. What could happen next? Will it come to the point where resistance could be stomped out of existence? Will it come to the point where everyone would be willing to embrace a monstrous status quo and want the resistance eradicated in exchange for what will pass for peace and security? Then the familiar will become normal. Those who resist will become the new monsters, the new boogeymen, the new superstition entering the inassailable fortress of forever. We will be legend in a nation of monsters. Regards, Bob. Another moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Well, between Bob and Prairie 2, I'm ready to go crack open a bottle of Cabernet and maybe fire one up, put my feet up, and play music for the rest of the program. Can we do that? No, I guess we can't, can we? Well, see, this is what happens when you have very talented, very talented writers who contribute their art to this program on such a on such an ongoing basis. God, I wish I were rich so I could pay these guys and gals. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy.
I've basically been frightened of moral turpitude. I'm scared of politicians who have no hobbies. As I get up in the morning, I'm afraid of increased weight. I am basically frightened. I'm afraid of people who don't think wrestling is real.
Flying monkey free fun and frivolity with Mike Malloy.
Oh, yeah. This is where it's at. After the break at the top of the hour, we're going to open the lines to take your phone calls. All right, new feature tonight from our education correspondent, Kay Petrini in San Francisco, who writes, Mike, thank you for reading the letter from Patricia on Friday's program. She's the mom who wrote about the conditions under which her fourth grader is returning to school here in California. If you'll remember, that was the one she wrote about 38 kids in the class and on and on. It outraged me to hear about the deplorable situation in her daughter's elementary school. It reminded me why many of our high school students do not have a solid grasp of basic educational skills. You know, the three R's. At a professional development seminar I attended a few years back, one of the speakers commented that the differences between teaching elementary school and high school were becoming less distinct. According to her, the classroom strategies that teachers use and the behavior issues we deal with are becoming more consistent as kids move from elementary through junior high and high school. Unfortunately, she didn't mean that younger kids are suddenly acting more mature or reading at higher grade levels. Just the opposite. High school teaching is becoming more remedial. One of the books I read this summer is titled, I Read It, But I Don't Get It, Strategies for Adolescent Readers. The title of the book is self-explanatory, but there are some, but here are some of the questions it raises. Why do so many kids hate to read? Why do they fake read? Most importantly, why are kids not able to understand what they are reading? This is an observation I hear constantly from high school teachers who have been in the profession much longer than I. Again and again, teachers are baffled by how kids can get to high school and beyond without understanding what they're reading. Most will tell you that it's getting worse each year. Patricia's letter points to some of the main reasons for these problems: overcrowding, lack of resources, and lack of parental involvement in the elementary schools. Because of this, kids are not learning the basics. Those first 6 years form the foundation for these kids' future learning. This is where they learn how to read, how to write, how to add or subtract or multiply or divide. This is why the short shrift given to our schools is particularly damaging in those early grades. High school teachers are reading and writing to teach content. We ask kids to interpret a passage or write a reflection. I teach my juniors how to write a term paper step by step. All of these lessons require that a child has learned how to read and construct meaning. If that foundation is shaky, we can't do our jobs effectively. Kids see us for 50 minutes a day on average, and although we try, we simply cannot fill in those elementary gaps. There are many facets of this problem that we can't control. We can't control if a child comes from a home where no English is spoken. We can't control whether a kid has parents who give a damn. We can't control whether a kid has a safe place to live or a desk where he can do his homework. We can make suggestions about these things, but that's about it. On the other hand, we can control the resources we put into our schools, especially our elementary schools. We can ensure that at school, these kids have everything they need to learn. We can provide them with a clean, safe environment in which to learn and teachers who care about their learning. Or can we? Sometimes I think George Carlin was right when he said, "The real owners are the big wealthy business interests that control things and make all the important decisions." I'll tell you what they don't want. They don't want a population of citizens capable of critical thinking. They don't want well-informed, well-educated people capable of critical thinking. They're not interested in that. That doesn't help them. That's against their interests. They don't want people who are smart enough to sit around the kitchen table and figure out how badly they're getting effed by a system that threw them overboard 30 effing years ago. I just don't want to think Carlin is right today. The first day of a brand new school year. Okay. Yeah, I remember that that riff by George Carlin. I wish Hunter Thompson and George Carlin were still around, don't you? All right, we're going to open up the phones. The number here, if you would like to join us, is 877-996-2556. 877-996-2556. What else we got? Do we have any announcements? I don't think we have any announcements, do we? Quick email from Don in Baltimore. Mike and Kathy, all this town hall meeting hatred and chaos looks like some old-fashioned CIA psyops operation. It looks like the right wing in America has learned what was once considered spy trade craft. Now our news media outlets like Fox and CNN and others seem to be employing CIA psyops tactics on the American people. We know the Reagan administration used those CIA psychological warfare tactics on the American people. We knew the Bush crime family used them on the American people. We know our Pentagon had, and maybe still has, psychological warfare programs that they use on the American people. And now we have major corporate industries using CIA psyops tactics on the American people. In other words, we are all being hit by these CIA psyops operations, and they're hitting us from all sides, and we see the results of this insanity. Our government cannot get anything done unless it benefits the corporations and the millionaire CEOs we see in every major corporate industry. How can we battle the corporations with the truth when all around us there is planned psychological chaos and confusion? Who is benefiting from it all? Not the people. There's a war going on in America, and it's against the American people. Don in Baltimore. We'll be back after the break with your phone calls and a few other little items. Stick around, okay? I'm Mike Malloy. This portion of the Mike Malloy Show is brought to you by Patriot Majority. Patriot Majority believes it is our patriotic duty as Americans to pass health care reform now with a strong public plan option. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour on the Monday edition of the Malloy Show here. We don't have any announcements, huh? Nothing coming up, Catherine?
I have a dental appointment next Monday.
I know.
Molly has a little dance camp recital Friday.
Okay, thank you. I get the point. If you are not a podcast subscriber to the Malloy Show, I hope you'll consider doing that. Go to MikeMalloy.com. The information is there. It leaps off the page at you. Is the doctor that sent us the 20 gift subscriptions, are we going to mention his name, or is he another one that wants to be anonymous?
I'm going to send him lots of cookies. He didn't specify anonymity or not. I would love to publicize anybody who wants to send us 20 podcast subscriptions, but at the very least,
that was incredible.
Baked goods will be involved.
The people who do contribute, in this case, it was over $1,100 to give away 20 podcast subscriptions. It just blows me away. He's a physician from up east. You remember where? And it just always is stunning to me that somebody would do that. 10, 25, 1. We've gotten so many people who have written into our business headquarters in Connecticut and indicated they wanted to give a gift podcast subscription to someone. It's really great. So if you're among that group, thank you so much. I mean, this program depends on that. It's lifeblood, the podcast subscription. So if you have not subscribed yet and can see your way to do it, we certainly would appreciate it. The podcast subscription gets you downloads, commercial free, plus Malloy's Uncensored Mailbag. We're about due for another one of those. And do we have anything else that we give away free? I don't think so. For the time being, that's it. That's what it's been for the past 6 months, ever since we've been in business with the Malloy Broadcasting, right? We'll come up with some other stuff. But in the meantime, if you would subscribe, it's $59.40 a year. If you subscribe on a yearly basis, which works out to a quarter, 25 cents a program. if that's a bit steep right now, $7.95 a month will do the same thing. So we encourage you. You know, when somebody says we encourage you, you know what they're really saying? We're begging you to become a podcast subscriber. If you're so inclined, go to MikeMalloy.com. The information is there. Thanks. I know I could come up with something for announcements. Dave is in L.A. listening on KTLK. Hey, Dave.
Mike, long-time listener.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that.
I want to say that even if we had Medicare for everybody, doctors are still docile when it comes to pharmaceutical companies. If there's a study and the six-month study looks good and then the year study looks bad, guess which one the doctors get. So how are we going to get our staph infection, you know, if we can't get this plan going? And that's all I got to say. I just don't trust doctors. I don't trust the swine flu shot. I don't trust Lipitor.
Lipitor? Why don't you trust Lipitor?
Well, because it matters if your veins are or your arteries, whether your blood clots and whether the sides of your arteries stick. And that's not the test they give you. So the cholesterol thing is a total house of cards. And so is much medicine. I don't trust Western medicine. I wish we would go back to herbs. And that's all I got to say. I feel a little intimidated because you guys are so smart. But thank you very much, Mike.
Oh, we're not that smart. Thank you, Dave. I appreciate you checking in. You know, as far as traditional medicine, Chinese medicine, Native American medicine, Yeah. Sure. I completely support that idea. I really do. So how do we get there? Well, you do it individually. And you can. This last go-around I had with whatever the hell that bronchitis was, I got several emails from people who came up with some really good advice about certain fungus medication and herb or root medication and, you know, preventive stuff, homeopathic stuff, or not homeopathic, you know, natural cures. And I did some checking with two or three of the health stores around Metro Atlanta, vitamin shops and so on and so forth, and did some research on the internet. And I'm ready to rock and roll with this stuff. I really am. I guess where concerns, you know, the pharmaceutical industry, I realize they're ghouls and bastards and vampires, but on the other hand, do you not agree that they do produce some stuff that is acceptable? You know, we all know where aspirin originates. You know, it comes from the bark of a tree, but, you know, how much bark can you chew? You know, isn't it better to take a 325 milligram aspirin if you're looking to interrupt some pain, or an 81 milligram if you're looking to take an anti-inflammatory, or is it better to take something more natural? What is unnatural about aspirin? I know. The company, Bayer, German company that has murdered and killed and poisoned and destroyed millions, you know, so where do you stop? I don't know where to stop. I don't even know where to start. I really don't. I don't disagree at all with the idea of natural substances that are not handled by pharmaceutical companies as being the answer for primarily preventive medicine. What's that stuff that we decided to take the immune boosters of? Huh? Epicor? E-P-I-C-O-R. That's the immune booster. What's the other one? OSHA. What's OSHA? O-S-H-A. Because we got some of that, too.
I believe that's if you've already got an infection that's supposed to help fight it in your respiratory tract. But the Epicor, one of our affiliates, actually, who was sick and tired of you being sick.
I get sick twice a year. Jesus.
Yeah, and you're sick for a month. Anyway,
this last time.
That's true. He emailed me about Epicor, and it's E-P-I-C-O-R, and it's a yeast, Brewer's yeast derivative. It's a
fermented yeast.
A fermented yeast product.
Right.
Apparently, they discovered an animal. It was something that they were putting in animal pet food, like feed, not pet food, but feed for livestock.
Yeah, I remember that. It was a byproduct of that process, and the workers in this factory were not getting ill, and the insurance companies that handled that factory and all sorts of other employer-based insurance noticed, and you know they noticed that, well, why is this group of workers not getting sick? And then they did human studies, animal studies, I believe a couple of medical centers in the United States here. Was it the Mayo Clinic or Johns Hopkins studied this, and they did double-blind studies, and by God, they found that Epicor, E-P-I-C-O-R, has this amazing ability to build certain white cells in your bloodstream that are monsters where it concerns invading viruses and bacteria. So,
well, they're called killer T cells, I think.
Is it killer T cells?
And what it does is it actually inhibits an enzyme in your body that is responsible for deactivating those so that more of them are remaining active all the time.
Well, we have started that. And, you know, after really checking it out and getting online and getting into some discussions about it, so... Yeah, I agree with the caller from L.A. It is difficult to trust pharmaceutical companies who are not really interested in your health. They're interested in your sickness.
Never say never. Forever is a long, long time. She said, never
song I sing, you will understand. Listen. You hold the key to
arm yourself with the truth. It's More Mike Malloy.
Just one key unlocks them both. It's there at your command. Come on, people now. Smile on your brother. Everybody gets a
pain. 22 past the hour. On the Malloy Show, back to your phone calls here. Faith is in Pittsburgh. Hey, Faith.
Uh-oh.
What?
I'm not prepared. Kathy said I had to talk about health care.
No. She
did. She said it, and she's in charge.
Oh, okay. Go ahead. Talk about health care.
I learned, and she said I had to talk about health care.
Okay.
So I have to come up with something.
Okay. Well, here, let me put you on hold. And you think about what you want to talk about, and we'll come back to you, okay? Mike is in Chicago. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how are you? How's my old friend doing?
I haven't talked to you in a while. I'm doing great, yeah. Several of you people, I'm beginning to wonder where in the hell you were.
Yeah, well, I'm one of the few people in America who's actually working a lot of hours.
Oh, okay, well, that's your excuse, all right.
But I just wanted to know if you heard the good news that Republicans are now pro-choice. I don't know if you heard or not.
I don't think I did. What are they pro-choice about?
It's so obvious because they want the government to keep out of people's medical decisions, so I just assumed, you know.
No, Mike. No. They only want people to stay out of the medical decisions insofar as it suits their agenda.
You're right, when it's convenient for them.
Right. There you go.
But I just wanted to call and let you know I was watching Rachel's show tonight, and she brought up a great point, and that is, why is it that you cannot fly a small aircraft within a mile of the White House, but you can bring AR-15s to the president's speeches?
That's a good question. And as we mentioned earlier tonight, during the Bush years, First Amendment zones were set up a good distance away from where Bush was speaking. Why not Second Amendment zones?
Right. And, you know, you have the right to carry, to bear arms, but it doesn't mean that you have to carry them at all times.
I know.
You know? But my point is, I have literally contacted pretty much every progressive radio station, including the White House and Dick Durbin's office.
Yeah.
No one seems to be bringing up this point, and that is the three largest supporters of Obama on the campaign trail, other than the unions, were the anti-war activists, the gay and lesbian community, and people who want to see the Bush administration in The Hague.
Mm-hmm.
And Obama's done nothing for these groups. And now he's pretty much disregarding his health care reform constituents also. And as far as I can see, his popularity is just going to be circling the drain. And they're going to lose a lot of seats in the 2010 election because of this. And I wanted to know what your take on it was.
Well, I agree that he is not fulfilling the agenda that progressives or liberals or mainstream Democrats thought was his agenda. I mentioned this earlier tonight. Obama, because of his history, I think, is tries to find compromise, tries to find agreements, tries to split the difference, and trying to do that with Republicans is insane. That's like juggling sticks of dynamite. That's like trying to gargle with razor blades. Republicans will cut your throat. They don't care. Republicans don't give a damn about anything except themselves. So I personally think he's making a hideous mistake. On the other hand, it may be part of the Obama plan. And I know, I've been saying that for 6 months now, and I imagine people are getting tired of hearing me say that. It's like, wake up, Malloy. He's not what you thought he was. Maybe so. But I'm not ready to pull the plug quite yet. I keep saying that, too. So.
Well, you know what, like, I was watching the news, and I shouldn't say the news, I should say the version of the news that's out there, and they're saying that Obama is now saying he's against the Defense of Marriage Act, but yet he's doing nothing to stop the enforcement of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell in the military until the Congress gets its act together to overturn it.
Mm-hmm.
He at least has the authority to stop the enforcement of it, and he's done nothing about it.
Well, I think there might be, Mike, to some degree, and and I'm just picking this out of the air. I'm not saying Obama has indicated this, but maybe he has an element of fear now in what he's doing. He has a family. He has his own life. He's not unaware of all these people that are threatening to kill him. The White House is getting, what did I read last week, 30 serious death threats a day. The entire right-wing blogosphere and the entire right-wing media behemoth in this country are constantly trying to incite people to attack him or shoot him or kill him or otherwise disrupt his presidency. Maybe, just maybe, Barack Obama is starting to think, I've got to take this slow. I've got to take it a bit at a time. I don't think Barack Obama wants to be Jesus Christ. He doesn't want to wind up on a cross and die for people's sins. He doesn't want that mythology built around him. There's already one guy who has that. So, you know, I don't know. Mike, I'm you know, flummoxed like a lot of people. Mike, I got to leave it there. Thanks, pal. Don't be a stranger. Stay in touch, okay? We'll be back. Stay with us.
So I take a look around to see what do I see. It looking like the world's going just a little crazy. And I know it can be all of them and it's just not me. Yeah. So I guess I'm going, I'm going just a little crazy.
Get your news unfiltered, only with Mike Malone.
It's about 25 before the hour. This is the Malloy Show. Back to your phone calls. John is in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Is that right?
Yes, sir. The belly of the Republican beast.
yeah, it is.
Home of the Eric Prince.
Oh my God, that's right. Well, welcome to the program, John.
You know, one thing I want to touch base on real quick. The other night I tried to call you, and I know you were talking about Calvin College as, you know, the Nazi regime and stuff like that.
Right.
What interesting point about that, how things are even kind of changing there. There's some things geographically and demographically that are changing in this area that are driving the Republicans nuts.
Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting. Bush was trying to go there for a softball graduation speech.
Uh-huh.
He was in office.
Uh-huh.
And the academia of the university spent about $10,000 on a full page ad in the Grand Rapids Press stating that they did not agree with his policy and his way of doing things.
Yeah, but wasn't that because he wasn't right wing enough?
No, it was a more liberal about his ideas on the war. I mean, truthfully, I mean,
really?
Believe me, I'm with you. I'm all with you. And I found it really, it was almost like Twilight Zone reading the article. I found it kind of refreshing, truthfully.
But, yeah.
I mean, in the end, you're pretty much right about what they're about.
Mm-hmm.
On the healthcare thing, I called my boys in sick at school and took them to downtown Grand Rapids for Obama's speech.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it regrettable that he was even using his grandmother or his mother not being able to get coverage on her cancer care. And that's not going to happen for Americans. And it's got the biggest reaction of the speech that day.
Mm-hmm.
And how he's going away from that. And I'm hoping that he'll come back to it. On the other issue that you were talking about, the preventative care and all the natural stuff,
right?
There was this tape. This guy was pushing these minerals, soluble minerals, and it's called something like 100 Dead Doctors Can't Lie, and it was a doctor in a speech, and he began the speech by stating, Hurricane Andrew, X amount of people were arrested because they brought water down into the area and were overcharging for the water, so they all got arrested for price gouging.
Mm-hmm.
Then he says a heart surgeon to do a transplant gets a heart that's donated, so he doesn't have to pay for that.
Mm-hmm.
Because he uses like $15 worth of suturing material. and then charges you $700,000 for the operation and well, price gouging.
Well, no, wait. No, wait a minute, John. If it were that simple, we could have Joe the plumber do it.
Well, you know what I mean. He just broke it down into.
Well, I understand, you know. But I think there is a limit beyond which the criticism, and I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about what you're quoting here. The criticism becomes gratuitous. A physician who has 15, 18 years of chemistry, of physiology, of biochemistry. I mean, just on and on and on and on. As part of her education or his education, especially surgeons, I think they're amazing people. Now, granted, wouldn't it be nice if we had like in one of the Star Trek movies where Bones would just, when somebody was grievously wounded, instead of cutting open their chest, he would just take his whatever it was and lay it up against them, and they would heal. But we're not there yet.
Well, I'm not minimizing your talent or what they're worth or anything.
Right.
I just found that interesting. But what he went on to say in that was how doctors had been doing all these ulcer surgeries for years and years and years, when since the early 1950s, he used evidently pigs on pig farms are very susceptible to ulcers. And he said that veterinarians had just been using antibiotics to clear up ulcers for years.
Well, it took a while. I completely agree. I don't know if it went back that far, the 50s. I'll take your word for it. But maybe, animal husbandry or veterinarian medicine, nobody made the connection over to over to human medicine. I remember one time back in the mid-60s, I had a doctor tell me I had a duodenal ulcer, which, I don't know, it miraculously went away. But I don't know if he was right or wrong. But they gave me all kinds of drugs, and the drugs didn't do a damn thing. I mean, absolutely
right.
Nothing except screw me up, make me high, made me mush-mouthed. So I think it's only been in the past decade and a half. I know it hasn't been very long where what's the bacteria, Campylobacter? Is that right, Kathy? Campylobacter, bacteria that causes, that's probably not right, but, that causes, stomach ulcers. So, one thing about science, science is not a rigid discipline. It keeps changing. And medicine,
it's dynamic,
right. And medicine is part of science. It's a fundamental part of science, or vice versa. Science is a fundamental part of medicine. And since, science keeps changing and accepts the challenge, I think medicine does the same thing. Now, I have respect for the medical profession. You could give me a whole list of doctors that I think should be jailed, and plumbers and lawyers and bus drivers and airline pilots and talk show hosts. But I do, as a profession, I have a lot of respect for the dedication and the skill that they put into it. Now, having said all that, I hope to hell health insurance reform passes. You know what I'm saying, John?
You betcha.
All right.
Keep doing your good work, Mike. I enjoy listening to you.
Thank you, sir. And hold on, hang on in Grand Rapids, all right?
I shall, man. It's hell being an Irish Catholic Democrat in this area, believe me.
Boy, it must be rough. Thanks, John. All right, take care, sir. Take care. Yeah, I do. I know it's great sport to just condemn all physicians, or 99% of them. I don't do that. I really don't, because until we do come up with this magical ray that you just remember that Kathy with, and Bones said, back in the 21st century they were barbaric. They used to cut into people.
Cut and sew people like garments, Jim.
Yeah, right. They sew people up like garments.
I want to say one thing about physicians, though. That
talking into your microphone there, you're drifting away.
It kind of aggravates me a little bit, and it's that I think some people revere them like holy men, and they're afraid to question them. And these are human beings, doctors, and they make mistakes. And you have every right to interview them because they work for you, and in many respects, your life depends on their care. So if I get irked by folks that I know who say, oh, well, my doctor told me to do this, so I've got to do this. Like, what, didn't you ask? Get another opinion.
Yeah.
What did you ask them? How long did they spend talking to you? I mean, I make my doctor talk to me. Of course, I'm picky, and I get great doctors.
Right. Well, we've got a good general. He's an internist, but a good general practitioner. Molly's physician is wonderful.
She gives us homeopathic treatments. Yeah, and
right.
Suggestions,
exactly.
And vitamin therapy all the time. Tells us how much fish you should be eating.
How much vitamin D
and
B6 and just all of the stuff. So yeah, we've got some good ones, and that's why
she spanked me verbally when I suggested giving Molly some Pepto that time. She had an upset stomach. She said, "No, don't give her that poison."
Right. Don't. Pepto Bismol is poison. Yeah, and she's right. She's absolutely right. So I like our pediatrician. I like the guy I go to. I know you like the.
I love my OBGYN.
Right, and your general practitioner, Dr. Rabinowitz. All these people, I think, are good. So it's hard for me to I don't. That's not what the guy from Grand Rapids was doing. I understand that, but as far as surgeons or especially neurosurgeons, I mean, oh my God, look what they do. Look what they do, and saves a lot of lives. Okay, you all can send me emails and tell me I'm crazier than hell now if you want to. You know, whatever. From Long Beach, Lilo is calling. Lilo, is that right?
Hello, Mike.
Hi, Lilo.
This is Lilo. This is the wise German woman.
Oh, you're a wise German woman.
Yeah, and I was a little pissed off, to tell you the truth, when you talk about... Bayer and the German company and blah, blah, blah. You know, Mike, the people that you're talking about, they're not alive anymore. I am an old crow. I'm 74.
Uh-huh.
And you know, Mike, when the war was over, I was 10 years old.
Yeah.
I never killed anybody. I only remember cold and hunger and bombs.
I understand. Lilo, when I talk about the Nazis, I try to make that distinction.
Yeah.
Germany had the Nazis. This country has Nazis, too. They're not called.
This is a critical point. Mike, you have no idea what could happen here.
No, I do. I do. I have a very clear understanding of what could happen.
Good. Good.
And that's what freaks me out, Lilo, because I know... You know, I said one night, how could a society like Germany in the early 20th century, with the art, the science, the literature, the music, the composers, the dance,
the culture,
all of it, give themselves over to a madman like Hitler, who then took 50 million people on the planet into hell. So, no, I think a lot of people do understand. Oops, Lilo, I'm sorry. It looks like I broke the connection. I'm sorry. I was going to put you on hold. I do understand, and I think a lot of Americans understand. It's not the Germans that we're talking about. It's the Nazis. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy. It is 10 before the hour. Time to mention our crew. Our technical advisors, Ben Birch, military affairs correspondent is Sharon Gordy, economic affairs correspondent is Bruce Enberg, educational affairs correspondent is Kay Petrini, and the program's ethical advisors are Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf. Our engineer is Kathy Bay, who is also the executive producer. All right, back to some phone calls here. Nick is in Owensboro, Kentucky. Hey, Nick.
Hey, how's it going?
Moving right along. How are you?
I'm pretty good.
Good.
But my biggest question is, we have a Medicaid system here.
No.
The biggest problem with it is most of the people that are on the Medicaid system, I hate to say the word most, but the majority of them that we see in our practice are, every time we screen them for drugs, they're positive, and mostly for marijuana. So what are your thoughts, you know, if you're screened and you're getting free health care, should that be pulled away?
Well, I'd have to know a lot more. You're handing me a very bare bones scenario there. I don't think people should use drugs, but I mean, what kind of drugs? You talk about heroin and cocaine and meth.
No, most of them are THC. Most of them are marijuana users.
Marijuana users? Well,
yeah.
Does it interfere with whatever their course of treatment is for a certain illness? If it doesn't, what's the problem? I wouldn't punish people who smoke reefer by suggesting they not get medical care. A reefer's not, I mean, to the extent that anything sucked into a person's lungs is going to harm them, sure, but marijuana,
sure.
Marijuana itself, so what? Now, if you're a physician, maybe you know more about this than I do, but why punish somebody who smoked pot by saying, oh, well, you smoke pot, you're not going to get Medicaid? I don't get the connection, Nick.
Well, it's an illegal drug. It's an illegal.
Well, use. Yeah. Well,
by HIPAA violation, you know, we're not allowed to, you know, say that. Hey.
Well,
you
know, now wait. Let me ask you this: is there something that says in the Medicaid bill that if someone turns up positive for THC, that their Medicaid is withdrawn? If there isn't, then it's not an issue.
Yeah, there's not at this time.
Okay. I mean, well, frankly, I don't think it should be. What if somebody comes into your office and they test positive for cigarettes? That'll kill them. Marijuana won't. What if they test positive for alcohol? That'll kill them. Marijuana won't.
I completely agree with you.
I'm not trying to be argumentative. I'm just saying.
Oh, by no means.
Okay.
But the whole point is one's an illegal substance and one's not an illegal substance.
Well, so what? I mean, again, it's not illegal according to Medicaid rules. If it's illegal according to the laws of the state of Kentucky, then a crack Kentucky law enforcement division will get after it. But marijuana is also being prescribed now for certain diseases, pain, not a disease, but a condition, pain or glaucoma or post-chemotherapy cancer treatment. So, come on. Lighten up, Nick.
Huh? I hate to keep funding these people.
You hate what?
I said I hate to fund these people, you know, with my tax dollars. So they
why?
Buy their marijuana.
All right, look, Nick, you got to hang up about marijuana. I don't know what to tell you. I hate to fund people who would drive on the highways drunk, but I still have to pay highway taxes. I mean, how ridiculous shall we take this conversation? You see what I'm saying? I hate that my tax dollars go to kill women and children in Afghanistan or wherever it is that we're currently killing women and children or men or old people or young people. I frankly don't care. But come on, Nick, you're putting way too fine a point on it. If you don't want to fund Medicaid, I don't know what your problem is. Is it because you're upset that somebody's on Medicaid smokes a joint? I mean, come on. I don't get the connection. You sound kind of like grim and you know, just out to bitch slap somebody just because they smoke a joint. So what? If they smoke a pound, so what? What do you care? What do you care? You're not treating them for anything. If you're treating them for something where the marijuana interferes with the treatment, tell them. I mean, you're a doctor. If you are, I don't know what you are. I'm just guessing. If a physician says, hey, look, I'm going to give you this medicine. Do you take any drugs? My doctor has said that to me a million times. And always answering the truth. Yeah, I smoke reefer once in a while. Why? Well, don't do it when you're doing this. Oh, okay. You've got a different agenda going there. Come on, you really do. You really do. You got a different. You got an agenda going there. I'm not going to pay where they smoke marijuana. What if they smoke cigarettes? Oh, that's right. That's legal. Yeah, it's a legal substance. It shouldn't be. I think any doctor will tell you that nicotine and the tars and the poisons and how many chemicals in a puff of cigarette smoke? that are carcinogenic? 200, 500, 1,000, 1,800? I don't know. It doesn't matter if there's just one. You know. Do you have a problem with people on Medicaid who smoke cigarettes? Now, see, I could see where a physician might have a problem with that. Not because they're on Medicaid, but because they smoke. But you have an agenda going there, pal, that a little bit out of place for me. No offense. I'm not trying to be a jackass here. I do that without trying. But not reefer. Come on. Okay, thanks, everybody. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.